Greetings, everyone. Welcome to RQM Plus Live number 78, Behind the Scenes with BSI Head of IVD Notified Body, Alex Lahn. My name is Stephen Bernacki, Marketing Principal at RQM Plus, and I'm going to share a little bit about RQM Plus. I'll introduce today's panelists, including a special guest who you know because his name is in the title of the session. And then I'll turn it over to our moderator who will start the conversation. So we highly, highly encourage you to participate today. And the primary way that you can do that is by asking questions in the chat. You're free to ask questions at any time. And if you see a question someone else has asked that's interesting to you and you hope that we would answer, please feel free to interact with that message in the chat so we know. You're more than welcome to test out the chat, which I see many of you are doing right now. You could share what your role is, what you're hoping to get out of the discussion today, anything you like, if you feel so inclined. So very quickly, but importantly, we definitely want you to know who RQM Plus is and what we do. We're a global medtech service provider focused on accelerating compliance and market success. Through our unparalleled expertise and industry knowledge, we deliver specialized solutions and expedite the journey along the full product lifecycle for medical device and IVD companies, from concept to commercialization and continuing through post-market. So you can learn a lot more about us at the same place that you registered for today's event, and that's rqmplus.com. And now on to today's panelists, and we'll start with our guest, Alex Lahn, Head of IVD Notified Body at BSI. In his role, Alex is focused on further strengthening the regulatory foundations within the IVD team and making BSI future-proof for the years to come in the EU regulatory environment for IVDs. Alex is originally a biochemical engineer and worked on the design and development of ELISA-based assays in virology and immunohematology tests. He's also worked as a technical specialist in reagents and tests at Sanquin Blood Bank in Amsterdam, and he holds degrees in biomedical chemistry, biotechnology, and business administration. And from RQM Plus, we have Director of IVD Global Regulatory Affairs, Margot Borgel. In her role, Margot provides expertise in IVDR implementation and notified body requirements. Prior to RQM Plus, Margot was a technical specialist at BSI, where she performed technical reviews for IVDR, IVDD, and UKCA certification. She's especially passionate about the certification of high-risk devices, enjoyed seeing those devices through IVDR certification while she was at BSI. And before her notified body work, Margot worked for Immucor, where she held roles in R&D, manufacturing technical support, and manufacturing. And finally, our moderator today is Vice President of Business Development at RQM Plus, Teresa Miles. Teresa has over 30 years of experience working in healthcare and 12 and a half spent with RQM Plus. And with that, Teresa, I will get ready to launch a poll to start us off, and I will pass it off to you.
Yes, thank you so much. It's so awesome to see Spain here. We have sunny Miami, Florida. I am loving this. Ireland, always wanted to go there. I'm going to come see you, Joanna, in Ireland. We want to kick this off with a poll today. We really want to understand where you are in your notified body journey. So on your right side of your screen, the poll is active. Please go ahead and begin to answer the poll. And we will watch the results live as you're answering. And then we're going to kick off our discussion today. So thank you so much. Remember, the chat is open for any questions. We do have some questions that we plan to explore today in more depth, but we are always open to take your questions as you present them. So please feel free to ask anything specific you'd like to have us talk about today. Interesting results so far. 29 votes, 30 votes, keep them coming.
Pretty even split so far.
Yeah.
Very diverse audience here.
I thought maybe one or two categories would end up taking the lead, but it's staying pretty consistent. So go ahead, keep voting. And I'm actually going to ask Margot, I think, you know, really both of you, Alex or Margot, as you're seeing the results there, nothing earth shattering, no lead, but does that surprise you at all? Or is that what you expected?
It's a little bit surprising to me. I thought that there would be a little bit more towards the bottom of the poll, so that I have not made any progress. So this is very reassuring to see that I have a notified body and I have a certificate is well represented, and that, you know, you have a notified body and are working towards your certification, that those two buckets, are more than 50%, I think is very reassuring to me.
How about you, Alex? Any surprises there?
Well, it does reflect, other polls that I've seen before. I would like it to be that the majority would be in the top category, but it is a journey. like you said in the beginning, and I'm mindful of that.
Well, and hopefully after today, we can give our audience, you know, some empowerment and some education and information to get them in that top category, right? Margo, I know you wanted to talk. We really love to set the tone for our live webinars. We like to talk a little bit about timelines. We want to set the stage. So, Margo, I want to ask you to go ahead and walk us through any timeline information. We have a couple, we have a slide there I know you're going to present. Just help us understand from a viewpoint of manufacturers, what are they facing with respect to the regulations today?
Sure. Yeah. So we have some exciting news from this morning where the EU Parliament voted to approve the proposed transition, the new transition. So I'm going to pop that up on the screen and we're going to talk through it. And now this says proposed, but it was approved by Parliament today. So we're one step closer. It just needs to get published in the journal now and then it will be officially official. So yesterday, the timelines looked a little bit different than this, with kind of a rolling transition timeline ending with May 2025 for Class Ds, May 2026 for Class Cs, May 2027 for Class B and Class A sterile. This has changed. So basically what has happened is that the deadlines have shifted by 2.5 years. But there are a lot of caveats here. So when we're talking about this transition, you need to look at each device in your portfolio, understand where it is sitting currently, and look at where it is in the new transition, because nothing is as simple as it seems on this slide. So basically, any device that is currently on the market under IVDD, so has a declaration of conformity that was signed before May of 2022, and that plans to transition to IVDR can take advantage of these new transition timelines. So for Class D devices and for devices with existing IVDD certificates, so that's regardless of classification, anything that's under an IVDD certificate, those now have a new deadline of 31st December 2027. But you must lodge an application with your notified body by May of 2025 for those devices and have an agreement in place by September of 2025. And then the rest of the device classifications are pushed out by a year. So Class Cs is a year after that, with a formal application lodged by May of 2026, a transition deadline of December 2028. And then for Class B and Class A sterile devices, you must lodge your application by May of 2027, and the transition period will end December of 2029. And there are a lot of other caveats to this. So if you haven't read the transition, the proposed transition, I recommend you do so. And I'm sure that there'll be much more guidance coming out soon with the publication of the official amendment.
Very good. Alex, did you want to comment on anything that Margo just shared?
No, I think excellent presentation, Margo. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this presentation. I always like to understand what is happening with manufacturers, also questions that may arise. And you know, I see this as a nice opportunity to present the notified body. Now, with respect to the IVDR transition, just before this presentation, I was in a meeting with the European Commission and also representatives of competent authorities to go over a Q&A guidance that accompanies this particular transition amendment. And I think once this amendment is published in official journal, I expect this to happen within a couple of weeks. Then this Q&A guidance will also be made available, including a nice flowchart and decision sheet. And I can only stress that apart from this nice slide deck that Margo presented, it's very good to also take a look at that particular document, because that will help you in your journey and determining First of all, if it's eligible, and then second, if it is, what are the timelines and what are the next steps? So, and you know, in all honesty, I can understand that some of the manufacturers and people in the call get a bit weary about new timelines and extensions and where are we at. I think also looking at notified bodies and where other notified bodies are at, we are also in a journey, but the journey is up and we're moving in the right direction. And I think this amendment, although, you know, I would rather not go through this another extension again, I think it's the best solution and the most practical solution for now. So let's support that.
Wonderful. Yes, that's great. Now we have even more information to look forward to receiving. So I think that's incredibly helpful. Margo, we're already alluding to it, right? We're alluding to maybe the fatigue in the industry, the worry around the timelines shifting. I was hoping you could come, you know, you have a unique background having been on both sides, both manufacturing and within the notified body. I was hoping you could share a little bit of the viewpoint from a manufacturer's perspective. Where is some of that fatigue coming from? Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the fatigue is really coming from a place of uncertainty. Things keep changing, right? The transition timelines keep changing. The rules around those transition timelines keep changing. You know, we're seeing things happen from our MDR colleagues and seeing that, you know, potentially having to play out for the IVDs as well. So I think overall, the current landscape is just a little bit disconcerting, right? We keep having new guidance get published and then you have to adopt that guidance. You know, you're trying to get all of your technical files up to date, which could be a lot of devices, right? Some, you know, companies have hundreds and thousands of devices that you have to have full tech files for. And now you're having to go back and make sure the new guidance is incorporated. So it's just a lot to manage. And I think the other thing from the manufacturer side is that the notified body seems like a big black box. You don't know what goes on there. You don't know their attitude. You know, it's a little bit difficult to gauge sometimes what the notified body is thinking because they're very limited on things that they can say, right? So there's this rule that they're not allowed to consult and they have to hold that line firm. And so sometimes they can't give you the information that you want. And so there's just a lot of uncertainty out there.
No, I love that. And actually, that's a fantastic segue because I think it's really important for us to talk about the differences between how the notified bodies are structured in the EU and then how FDA is structured in the US. Because to your point, Margo, there are some unique differences, especially that consultative piece. Alex, would you like to walk us through those differences for the audience today, just to make sure that we're all understanding the nuances?
Yeah, I will. I concur with what Margo is saying, that you know, it can be challenging for manufacturers on one hand to go through what for many of them is quite a new process. Let's face it, under the IVD directive, the majority of the IVD devices were self-declared and placed on the market. And now it's basically flip-flopped and 80% of the devices will need to go through a notified body assessment. And for many IVD manufacturers, a notified body is very new. And also the role is, I would say, not always very well understood. Perhaps not always well understood from the US side. That has nothing to do with, you know, manufacturers not understanding Europe, but it has, I think, to do with the fact that there is a different regulatory structure in the US versus the EU. And that has to do with the way Europe is organized. Now, if you look at it very much from a bird's eye perspective, the big difference between the United States and Europe is that the United States is a country and it's federally run. I mean, the FDA is basically the watchdog for all of the devices and pharmaceuticals that are going into the US market. They are the regulator. Now, if you take a look at Europe, I would say Europe, first of all, Europe is not a country. if you want to call it something, it is a mutual recognition agreement among member states or among countries. I know even people that would say, well, it's a business deal. I don't want to call it like that. There's more to it. But to some degree, it is. In the past, and I think let's say more than 20, 30 years ago, if you want to place your device on the market in Germany, you needed to meet different requirements as to the United Kingdom or the Netherlands or Belgium or France. And one of the objectives of the European Union is to come to a single market where also from people and manufacturers outside of Europe, they're able to access that market as much as possible in a centralized way. And already at that time, they've seen that, you know, having different regulators with different views in different countries is quite difficult to line up. As a result, a system was set up to have a decentralized conformity assessment process. So with decentralized, what I mean by that, the notified bodies are private organizations. They carry out a conformity assessment for the manufacturers, but they also have responsibility towards the competent authorities. So basically, the competent authorities, they are delegating that responsibility to notified bodies. Now, the advantage of that is that if one notified bodies have reviewed your device and has issued a certificate, gone through the whole conformity assessment, then that device is able to be placed on the entire European market. So that's a big advantage. And to some degree, you know, a notified body can be compared to a regulator like the FDA. However, notified bodies are not the regulators. And since notified bodies are not regulators, we're not able to, do consultations or give even scientific advice. And in all fairness, you know, that's also a bit of a challenge to the notified bodies because, I mean, in the past, BSI and also other notified bodies, they've done clinical pathway reviews. They've done clinical strategy reviews. Many of the questions that are raised concern clinical. We were slapped on the wrist by doing that because this is very much a responsibility that resides with the competent authorities. The member states, they have a specific role in protecting the citizen. So if there would be any clinical study carried out, they would be the one controlling that process. Now, after a clinical study has been carried out or a clinical performance study, results need to be evaluated by the notified body as part of the conformity assessment process. And I think that makes it quite complicated for manufacturers to go through the process. Ideally, you would want to have just one entity dealing that, but that's not the case. I do see positive developments, though. There is initiative discussed on structured dialogue, where manufacturers can go into the dialogue with the notified body to talk about regulation, to talk about expectations, and although into a limited degree, also with clinical. And BSI is, you know, taking that up. We are enrolling a structured dialogue process also for the future, so our existing clients can make use of that opportunity moving forward. Does that answer your question?
That was fantastic. And actually, there was a question by Christopher there, and I'm going to pop it up on the screen. And he was asking if you could talk in more practical terms about the structured dialogue that you mentioned. Would you be able to give a little bit more detail?
Yeah, that's fine. In all fairness, also, if you look at where structured dialogue is described, it comes from the MDCG document 2022-14. It is basically meaning all the dialogues that are needed to smoothen the process, to get a clear expectation on the front end and also perhaps at the back end. And to some degree, I mean, BSI is already doing that. If you have experience with BSI, you will get a ski manager that will help you explain the process, explain you or refer you in the right direction moving forward. So practical terms, you know, we're already doing structured dialogue. Now, what industry on top of that really wants is to have clarity upfront on some clinical expectation and technical and regulatory expectations. And that is something we are also intending to roll out. Cannot share too many details on that, but we will basically do what we're already doing, but more in a structured fashion. There will be more note-taking, there will be more you know, clear documented evidence back, because that is also something that competent authorities expect from us. If they're going to audit us, they would like to look over our shoulder and say, well, you know, whatever you've said to manufacturer A and B, can you, you know, demonstrate what you have? So I'm mindful that I'm, you know, perhaps not too detailed on practical, but it is a thing that is going to be picked up and is going to be shown quite soon.
Yeah, and I think that that's like news to our ears, right? Because there's so much uncertainty when you're going into new product development, right? Especially trying to plan a clinical trial, not knowing if your endpoints are acceptable for the notified body and not having any, you know, hint, right? You're just kind of, you know, you're obviously, manufacturers are very well equipped to know their device and know the expectations, but, you know, there's still that unknown, is this going to be accepted by the notified body? And when you're spending, you know, upwards of $1 million on a clinical trial, you want to know that it's going to be acceptable and that you're not going to have to repeat it.
Yeah, that's true. But I think if you compare, you know, what is with pre-submission meetings with either an FDA or Health Canada, they can provide feedback, but there's always a disclaimer that, you know, things may change, regulation may change, views may change. So don't hold that against us. On the other hand, we do very much see an opportunity to help manufacturers on their way to compliance and take away uncertainty where we can.
I like it. It does sound a little like consulting, maybe a little bit.
Don't maybe say that.
You're the expert, Larissa, so.
Okay, I'll let it go. I think Jennifer actually was curious around the timeline, around the structured dialogue. Do you have a timeline yet as to when that may actually come into full force or not yet?
It's going to be in the fall of this year. So.
Okay, that's good enough.
I've also a follow-up in September. I'm going to talk at the RAPS in Long Beach on structured dialogue together with Tusut. And I better hope we have a process then together, because otherwise I would not have anything to talk about.
You won't have a talk. You won't have a topic. No, hopefully you will too.
Well, I will always have a topic, but.
Shout out for RAPS. Go to RAPS if you want to hear Alex share the details, right? We actually have a number of questions. We had some questions that we did want to really focus today's discussion around Alex having an opportunity to talk about his role at the notified body. But actually, if you don't mind, Alex, I think there's a couple questions we probably need to make sure that we ask. I'm going to pop this one up on the screen. And this is a question from Gail. Would notified bodies be willing to discuss if a product is regulated under Article 57 versus Article 58? And she's saying, example, clinical performance studies where simple venipuncture is used versus surgical intervention. Are you able to talk about that at all?
Well, also in the structured dialogue, we're not able to discuss the setup of clinical performance studies, because that's the territory of the competent authorities. I mean, in a more broader sense, from a regulatory perspective, we can certainly discuss, but and I am mindful of the fact that a lot of the questions will surround clinical, but that's not something we can take on board.
Understood.
On the other hand, if I might just interrupt here, you know, especially for IVD manufacturers, there are quite a lot of things to learn on regulation. So I think if there's one audience to which structured dialogue would be perfect is for IVD manufacturers. I'm not suggesting that, you know, IVD manufacturers know perhaps less than medical device manufacturers, but the fact is a lot of medical device manufacturers have gone through a notified body process. And I mean, using structured dialogue is perhaps a very good way to, you know, open the black box and get acquainted.
No, that's very good. Actually, there was a question a little bit more on that, asking if this would be, the structured dialogue will be aligned among all the notified bodies as a standardized way, or will each notified body have their own nuanced way of doing structured dialogue, or is it unique to your notified body?
Well, if you look at where structured dialogue is coming from, that's the so-called NDCG 22-14 action list. The structured dialogues comes from competent authorities, and it is their action to come with clear guidance towards notified bodies on how they should carry out structured dialogue. Unfortunately, we still haven't seen any guidance from that direction. And since we don't want to be sitting on our hands, notified bodies are taking the initiative to roll out structured dialogue with the information that we have, and also considering the expectations of industry as much as possible. So at the moment, BSI is enrolling this, TÜV-SÜD is that, and I'm pretty certain other notified bodies will be enrolling that as well. While we do that, I do hope, and I do to some degree also expect, that more guidance is coming from the competent authorities and how we can line that up. Because I agree, all notified bodies would need to have the same process for this.
Alex, is this something that Team NB is discussing?
Yes.
Are you guys aligning across that platform?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonderful. Well, and I think I want to make sure we get back to you, Alex, in particular, because I do think the whole point of today's discussion was just to help this audience better understand what your thought process is and what your background, maybe a little bit about your colleagues, because what you mentioned before really resonates with me. I think we're all here to protect patients. We're all here to do the right thing, right? No matter where you're coming from, a manufacturer, a consultant, you know, you yourself and the notified body, FDA, we're all here to protect patients. So I would really love to hear a little bit more about your role. What is a day in the life of Alex? What does it look like? And then I would like you to actually talk a little bit about the background of your colleagues, because I think it's important to understand who is at BSI and what are their backgrounds and why do they bring such value?
Yeah, true. Well, you know, to start off a little bit with me, I am relatively new to BSI, just started out less than 2 years ago, but I'm not new to the notified body world. I previously have worked in different roles at DEKRA, starting out as a notified body auditor, QMS auditor, dossier reviewer, certification manager, and at some point heading all of that. Now, my role within BSI is very much on governance because, you know, compared to the other roles that I had with DEKRA as another notified body, I had multiple hats and multiple roles, and that makes the work sometimes challenging. You know, BSI is being one of the biggest notified bodies. They organize differently. What they do is they have a dedicated group of people that are doing governance. And what I mean by that is that they're looking at the changes in the regulation. They try to do, like any regulatory specialist, assess the changes, determine the impact on our processes, and train people, update procedures, and make sure that whatever the technical specialist and the auditors are doing is in check. Next to that, we like to very much take a leadership position in the notified body space. meaning whenever notified bodies' role and conformity assessments are discussed, we want to be at the table. We, for instance, BSI was one of the first notified bodies to enroll hybrid audit approach. Because one hand, you know, we saw that during COVID, it's quite difficult to do our job. On the other hand, we also thought, look, hybrid is perhaps also the way to go. So we want to take that leadership position, and we also understand very much where manufacturers are coming from. Now, with respect to the roles that and the people that are with the notified body, a lot of the people are just the same technical specialists that have worked with manufacturers, or been trained to be an engineer, educated to be an engineer. I think half of the technical specialists would have a master's or a PhD degree. And we very much select the people, and not only about on their technical background, but also very much on their skills and partly their attitude. What's the attitude of a notified body reviewer or auditor, if I can say so? Perhaps you can best compare that with a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout. They always have the healthcare in mind. But at the same time, they also very much understand that healthcare is nothing without the availability of the devices. So many people that you perhaps run into if you are conveying with a notified body have the same background, understand their devices, but they're looking at it very much from a regulatory viewpoint. I think, and that's perhaps a bit of a bold statement, I think a majority of the experts on devices are with manufacturers, because you are doing this every single day. Now, with the notified body, we have technical specialists, but very much also a regulation specialist. So whatever we talk about compliance and evidence, it's very much driven by what is in the regulatory requirements of the IVDR. Now, a little bit about the roles within BSI. There are lots of them, but let's focus first on the dossier review. We have technical specialists, and these are the people that are actually reviewing the dossiers that are prepared by the manufacturers. Next to that, we have the scheme managers, and the scheme managers are the first point of contact with manufacturers. They are involved in the application review process. They're also involved in communication and questions. And to some degree, they're also there to smoothen the process. And, you know, for many of the technical specialists, they also have a dual role as being a scheme manager, which I do think helps. Next to that, we have internal clinicians, and that is, I think, new to compare to the old days when, you know, we were doing IVD directive, because there weren't that many internal clinicians available, at least not that for IVD. And we have four internal clinicians, and their view is very much focused on performance evaluation plan reviews, performance evaluation reports, underlying reports such as scientific validity, analytical performance, and clinical performance. And I think that is a good development, because although the expectation is much higher than perhaps previously, they're also the person that know a lot about how the product is used in practice. And to some degree also assures that they will not raise any stupid questions or just questions that are on their checklist. Personally, I think although checklists are very good from a compliance perspective, to some degree it does also take away your mind. And I think it's always good to think beyond what is in the checklist, understand your device. And that's the last thing I'd like to say about that. I think that's also the reason why it's so important for manufacturers to, apart from what's in the technical dossier, just to also explain, you know, what is your device doing and how does that interact with instrument? How does it, where does it sit in the diagnosis? Because the better we're able to understand that narrative, that position, the better we are able to focus our work on the things that are really important. And that's something that's sometimes a bit overlooked by manufacturers. And I, you know, I cannot blame manufacturers for that because they're not looking to the technical documentation the same way as notified bodies do. However, it is very good if they do in order to help them process through their documentation.
So I think that's an important point to call out. What you're saying is to make sure that you, when you're drafting that documentation, you do have to tell the story of your device, but you're telling the story to you, the notified body, and to make sure that that story is clear and understandable, right? I've always believed personally it's a bit of an art form to write that technical documentation in a way that compels the reader to really fully understand what that device is going to do on the market to the patient, the risks, the hazards, et cetera. So I think that's a really important nuance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk at all about the interaction between BSI in particular and the competent authority? I'm curious if there's a two-way discussion where, in terms of passing back and forth information between your organization and the competent authorities as to how the decisions that are being made, how will it actually impact the IVDR as it's being implemented? Can you talk at all about that?
So I think, first of all, it's important to understand that notified bodies and competent authorities have different roles and responsibilities. For the outside, it may look very much the same, but if you look further in detail, they have a different role. One first of them is that notified bodies are a third-party organization. They do conformity assessment, and that leads to a certificate. And that certificate will enable manufacturer to place device on the market in Europe. I have access all over Europe, not just one member state. So in that sense, notified bodies are very much involved in the pre-market process and perhaps to a lesser degree in the post-market process. Now, competent authorities, their main focus is to protect the citizens in the member states. So in case a device, once a device is placed in the market, there would be incidents or vigilance events, then it's the responsibility of competent authorities to, you know, protect their citizens and reach out to the manufacturer and say, look, we've seen a lot of bad results with your device, potentially leading to, a vigilance event. So their focus is, or their job is very much on market surveillance. And now there can be situations that, a certificate has been issued for a device and there are a lot of vigilance events that the competent authority will reach out to the notified body and saying, hey, we see a lot of activity, or can you tell us what is going on? Now, the people are aware with vigilance events, the fact that an event happens does not automatically mean that it is connected to your device, let alone whether the device is failing. There can be more at stake. So we cannot, you know, jump the gun and then say, look, there is a problem here. However, there may be situations that there is. So in those situations, competent authorities will reach out to the notified bodies. And we can then take appropriate measures, meaning we carry out an unannounced audit, or we can request for a specific documentation. We can take a look at complaint records, vigilance records, and try to see whether the certificate that we have made is at stake. Because ultimately, what we're doing with certification is we attest that a device is safe. We basically put our badge on it and saying, well, we can vouch for this product. But if there would be any problems, then, you know, there our authority perhaps is that we can take a decision to suspend the certificate or ask manufacturers to take corrective actions to address it. We need to be mindful of the fact that in case a thing has happened, does not automatically mean that it ties with your device, but it may. And that's something we need to assure.
No, that's great. What I hear is shared responsibility, right?
Yeah.
That's what I heard. All of that, all those words. That's what I heard. I loved it. No, that's very helpful. Margaret, did you want to share anything as well? I know we were going to get into Team NB here next, so I'm looking for some scoop from Alex. But is there anything from all the things that Alex has just shared, anything you want to comment on or nuances you want to pull out?
No, I don't think so. I think the separation, you know, the competent authority is concerned about patient safety once the device is on the market, is kind of the take home, but also the competent authority is responsible before then, right? When you're doing a clinical study. So the notified body kind of sits like in the middle of that, right? So if you're running a clinical study, you're potentially putting patients at risk there as well. The competent authority is going to be responsible for those approval of your clinical study, if that's required, you know, and that process can get a little confusing because you have a lot of competent authorities potentially involved. So the notified body is kind of like in the middle of those two things.
Yeah. And I mean, look, ideally, it would be nice if a notified body would do that as well. But I understand where competent authorities are coming from. At the end of the day, doing a clinical study or a clinical performance study, the objective is to get clinical evidence. And the clinical evidence is needed to build up your file that needs to be assessed by a notified body. But there are different ways of gathering clinical evidence, especially for legacy devices. If there's proper literature available, you know, make use of that. So does that answer?
Yes. No, very good. So let's talk a little bit about Team NB. Can you give us any insider information on what's currently being discussed?
Yeah. So for the people that are not really in the know about Team NB, Team NB is an organization where all notified bodies, medical notified bodies, let me put it this way, for medical devices as well as for IVD, can be part of. If you are getting part of Team NB, that also means that you need to support a code of conduct. And that code of conduct is a sort of a rule book that all the notified bodies need to comply with. So one way of, you know, lining up notified bodies is making sure that they follow and adhere to all the rules that are within that code of conduct. Next to that, we represent notified bodies in discussions with the European Commission and also with competent authorities and a medical device coordination group. And wherever we feel there is a need to harmonize or to come with a common interpretation, we also publish guidance documents. So you're probably already familiar with the medical device coordination group, MDCG guidance document. And that is an interpretation of the law. And that is something that you really need to, you know, take on board. The Team NB guidance documents are very helpful in better understanding what notified bodies do and what they expect. For instance, a best practice guide, which has been published by the Team NB last year, also a very good best practice guide on technical documentation for IVDs. So. And that really helps manufacturers to provide documentation which is on the right level. And then, you know, also an expectation to all the notified bodies. So it does create a level playing field. Now, the latest development on Team NB, because that was your question.
Yes, it was.
I can be long with you sometimes. So. we're very much looking into updating our code of conduct. We see also the requests from industry as well as member states and competent authorities that notified bodies need to be more consistent, that we need to follow much more of the same processes. Ideally, but, you know, let's set the expectation here, that's never going to happen, that irrespective of what notified body you're approaching, you'll get exactly the same service, exactly the same approach. But we can certainly do better than we're currently doing. So that is our main focus. That's the main focus of Team MB. One of the things that we're discussing is, can we line up the amount of time that is going to be spent on technical dossiers? Can we line up, for instance, on the fees? Can we line up on the application process? So I think on one hand, notified bodies want to, you know, present themselves as being very unique. On the other hand, that uniqueness can also be a bit of a downfall if manufacturers have to deal with totally different processes. I think if going into further details, you will notice that notified bodies are not that different amongst themselves. But sometimes the devil is in the details, and there is an opportunity to line up. And Team MB is very much focused on that. So
I love it. I hear synergies, I hear consistency, and I do think Margo and I can both comment from manufacturers. Consistency is a very welcome message.
Yeah. Yes. Alex, there's a really interesting question in the chat on guidance. And that is, what is the applicability of MedTech Europe guidance?
MedTech Europe guidance, the way I see it, it is helps lining up the approach of industry. It is, I think MedTech Europe have published a guidance on clinical evidence for IVDs. And there's quite a lot of good stuff in there. You know, a lot of things that perhaps notified bodies are not able to convey or talk about, but, you know, is captured there. So I think it's very helpful. But I do want to remind you, just following the guidance of MedTech Europe is not automatically a pass through, because the devil is sometimes in the details. And it is a document that is written by industry, very much focused and set up through the glasses of industry. So if you are new and you want to make use of the guidance of MedTech Europe, by all means, read through it, but also keep, for instance, Team MB or perhaps Medical Device Coordination Group guidance next to it. To give you one example, for instance, MDCG guidance tells you what regulators and notified body expect, but it doesn't tell you on how, because we're not, you know, allowed to do that. Now, MedTech Europe provides different examples on how to do a literature evaluation or how to determine what level of evidence is needed for a high risk IVD device, a very novel device, or perhaps, you know, a pipette, which is perhaps an IVD because it's called out for, but it does not really actually do something in the clinical arena, right? So that's the ultimate spectrum of what you can have. So I see MedTech Europe guidance as a nice way to get up to speed. But again, setting an expectation here, if you claim, well, we meet all the MedTech Europe guidance, so we should be okay, that is a wrong assumption. So see it as a very nice tool.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. You know, when I was a technical reviewer, we always reviewed the MedTech guidance, right? We read them, we look through them, make sure we know, you know, kind of what it says, but it's not the end all and be all of compliance. So you can't just meet that and then expect your notified body to just wave you through. Sometimes there's things that are flat out disagreed with. Sometimes you know, it's just not enough, right, to demonstrate compliance. So I wouldn't rely on that wholly.
No, but it is, it is a nice piece or discussion point. So if a manufacturer would reach out to us and say, we have this and this device and, you know, MedTech Europe has this position, yeah, maybe that we think, you know, this is a good solution, but it's not a guarantee. I mean, maybe there are very, you know, clear reasons why we would not agree with that. So I hope it helps.
No, very good. I wanted to mention that Margot was kind enough to put a link to teamnb.org in the chat. So make sure if you don't have that already, that is in the chat for you. We did have a question here, and I don't know, Alex, if you're comfortable answering about EUAI Act on the regulatory landscape for medical devices. Rama is asking if you would be willing to give any insights into that topic.
I'd love to if I could.
The $1 million question.
I think I keep trying to get you there. I keep trying.
No. I think it's good that you raised that. There are a lot of developments going on the AI Act. I think a discussion that is held behind the scene is what is the demarcation between the AI Act and the medical device that would contain AI. So think of medical device software which contains AI. If you look at the AI Act, it's a different act. And if you have software which is also a medical device which contains AI, then what you would not want is that you have the same organization, you know, BSI as an AI notified body, BSI as a medical device notified body, or IVD. That there will be a lot of repetition. Would ideally have the same people looking at it with a very clear approach, which may even leverage off some of the activities from one versus the other. And that's something I think is very useful for us as a notified body, also very useful for manufacturers. You know, there is some expectation management to be done towards other stakeholders, and that is something that is discussed at the moment. Apart from that, I'm not an AI expert, so not anything I can divulge on that.
Shameless plug, we can help, but keep going. All right, so I think we're going to be nearing a little bit of a wrap up on the session today. I do want to. Everybody knows I like to end with some take-home messages, but we had one poll that we wanted to share with everyone. So those of you that are still with us, we'd love for you to go ahead and answer the poll that we now have on the screen, because we want to keep bringing you really informative sessions, and we want to make sure that we're listening to you and helping connect you with the right leaders, connect you with the right topics. And we would love to know where you want us to take this particular topic next. But as everyone's doing this poll, I'm going to go to both Margot and Alex. I really would like you to share some take-home messages for today. What do you hope people walked away from this session with? And what can we share and impart with them, or even guidance to tell them where should they go next in terms of their own journey, understanding this topic in more depth?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the reason I wanted to have this session and the reason I reached out to Alex to join us today is so that, you know, everybody could just understand that the notified body is not that scary. My favorite saying is notified bodies are people too, right? So they're just like you. Most of them came from industry, were in your seat or close to it on that side. And, you know, they want to help patients first and they want to help you second, even though they sometimes can't. So just keep that in mind that, you know, really they want to be on your side, even though they have to kind of be neutral. And if you have questions for them, just ask them, you know, don't be worried about asking questions. They've heard it before, or they've heard something similar. And if they can't answer it, they'll tell you they can't answer it. And then we can all, you know, regroup and you can find somebody else to help you. Yeah, I think that's the main thing. It's just they're very approachable, so don't be intimidated by them.
Notified bodies are people too. I love that. That's a great t-shirt slogan. Love it.
Let's get them made.
Alex, how about you?
Yeah, I was thinking about another slogan. Notified bodies are no nobodies, but, you know, that has already been used. Anyway, no, I very much concur with what Margot is saying. I think notified bodies are not that well known, and I do hope that by, you know, being on the presentation here today, I'm able to shed a little bit more light on what a notified body does and who was behind the scenes. And as said, you know, we're all very much dedicated people. We'd like healthcare to work, and we're also mindful of the fact that there's no healthcare if there's no devices on the market. But there is a balance, because, you know, we have also seen that sometimes devices that are either not compliant or unsafe are on the market, which could create quite a lot of havoc. And we see then as a role to, you know, protect our citizens to some degree, you know, a little bit on top of what the competent authorities are doing. My take-home message with especially the people that have not engaged with the notified body, you know, go get a cup of coffee, come by, just, you know, check us out. And we are at conferences, we have stands, feel free to, you know, also challenge us. You know, that's what we like.
Excellent. Thank you. Stephen, we'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Sarisa. We want to sincerely thank everyone for being here today. Thank you to Alex for joining us as a special guest. We shared a survey link in the chat earlier, and I shared it one more time just moments ago. It should only take a minute to complete. That's no exaggeration. It's very fast. Your answers to those few questions really do help us make these sessions better and understand how we're doing. And just like the poll at the end, what we should talk about next. So thanks to anyone who completes it. You will receive a comprehensive follow-up email from us no later than early next week. It'll probably come sooner than that. It'll contain the recording, the topics we covered with timestamps, as well as the slide that we shared earlier today that Margot talked through. And the final last things at the end we want to mention are just to please follow RQM Plus on LinkedIn if you use RQM Plus, or if you use LinkedIn, and to follow our podcast, Device Advice by RQM Plus. You can find us in both of those places by searching, which is RQM Plus. We share a lot of our free content on LinkedIn. For the past 7 weeks, we've been publishing a LinkedIn exclusive newsletter. It's called the RQM Plus Weekly Watch, which is something we started because we were conducting a ton of regulatory intelligence internally and realized that a good chunk of that was suitable for external consumption too. So that we're now sharing that with everyone, but you can only get it on LinkedIn. So please visit us there for that. And that's all we have for today. Thanks again for being here, and we hope to see you again soon. Bye all.
Thank you.
Thank you.